Accelerating your fandom, this is Flash TV Talk.
Welcome to Flash TV Talk, the fan podcast dedicated to news, reviews, and more for the hit CW show, The Flash. I'm Bo.
And I'm back. I mean, Bell.
Man, yeah, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. The weather's nice, getting back in the swing of things, and I think everything's gonna be good.
Everything's gonna be okay?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, it's, sorry, I'm taking my jacket off because all of a sudden I just got hot.
That's all right. You're doing the Mr. Rogers thing.
Yeah.
Beautiful day in the neighborhood.
I'm gonna take off my jacket here, stand a little bit away from the microphone.
Thanks so much for giving us a week last week as Bell was dealing with some personal, some family issues. Before we get started, Bell, everything cool? You doing all right? Is everything okay there?
Yeah, everything's good. We have my mother-in-law moved in now and we're, you know, working on, you know, getting her health back in order. So, we have all doctor's appointments scheduled and, you know, I'm cooking good, nice, healthy meals and everything.
There you go.
And we're just, you know, we're working on it. We're taking it day by day, so.
Taking it day by day. All right, man. Well, look, we're really happy to have you back. And, of course, your family's been in our thoughts and prayers this last past week.
And, hey, I just wanted to say I appreciate all the mentions on Twitter and things like that saying, you know, good luck and wishing me well and all those kinds of things and the thoughts and prayers. I really do appreciate that. That was very kind of you guys.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the Flash fans take care of their own. And there is no own of theirs more than Bell. Bell. We got a lot of work to do, man. We've got a pretty packed episode this week because, of course, we are doing not one but two episodes of The Flash, and we got to get at least a little bit of that Snyder cut talk in. So here's kind of what you can expect. I feel like I need to like lay out the groundwork here. We got the episodes we're going to talk about. That'll be kind of the primary meat of the show. Then at the end of that, we are going to talk a little bit about the Snyder Cut. Not too much. We will have, you know, later on down the line, we'll have like a full panel to screen, release the rose-colored cut, you know, full-on review of the Snyder Cut. But for now, we just kind of want to give some immediate reactions. Bell says he's watched it, what was it, 16 times?
I have done nothing but watch the Snyder Cut.
I mean, you would have to if it was 16 times. Yeah. I'm pretty sure you would have had to like turn back time in order to fit that in the amount of time we've had.
No, but I've actually watched it twice. But we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. Absolutely. Yeah. But before we talk about and really dive into the episodes, want to address some news. So let's hit them with a news flash.
Newsflash.
All right, man. So as you may have seen, as many now have already seen, there has been a casting announcement for the part and the role of Bart Allen. Jordan Fisher has been cast in this role. Now, you know, we don't know anything yet beyond that. I mean, there is some kind of knowledge and of course some mining as to, you know, the role has kind of been made public and that sort of thing, but I've been trying to kind of steer clear of it. We have a Bart Allen. This is a character that is set to be a reoccurring type of role. Jordan Fisher, you know, I'm not as familiar with him. I think he's relatively new, I want to say.
I was just looking up some stuff here, and he's been active since 2009.
He won Dancing with the Stars.
Hey, there you go. Winner on season 25.
He also hosted Dancing with the Stars Juniors.
And To All the Boys, P.S. I Still Love You. That's a recent movie, right?
That's right. That was 2020. That was, oh, yeah. Wait, he was in Hamilton. Well, you know, in 2016 to 2017, he was in Hamilton.
that's to say he was not part of the original cast.
No, he wasn't part of the original cast. But still, he was like you weren't in Hamilton. I haven't been in Hamilton. Come on. We were in Flashleton.
He was also in MJ the Musical. That's pretty cool.
There you go. Anyway, so he's coming. He's going to be Bart Allen. Here's the deal. I think they are focused on a teenage Bart Allen, which makes sense because the CW and the actor is 26. So that you know, reads as a teenager. I'm very curious as to where they're going to take things because we've already gotten what I would have kind of presumed to be a Bart Allen-esque storyline with Nora. I hope it's not too much spoilers to suggest that this take on Bart Allen, much like what they did with Wally West, much like kind of how they've really much like they did with Jay Garrick, they're bringing the Flash family in a little closer together. So, for example, Wally is not you know, Bart's, or rather Barry's nephew. He's his brother-in-law. And here, it's not that Bart Allen will be their grandchild or from a distant future. Bart Allen here will actually be the son of Barry and Iris. So from this standpoint, we're getting kind of another, like, it's hard not to say, like, we got another Nora here. And I don't know. Like, how do you think, Belle, we can look forward to Bart Allen in a different way from Nora? Or do you think this is going to be kind of like we're going to learn from what happened with Nora and do things different this time?
You know, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I had assumed, just, I saw the casting headline, didn't have a chance to read the article, and I had assumed it would have been, you know, like a far future, distant grandchild, great grandchild, you know, something like that. I'm surprised to hear from you that he's going to be playing their son, like some, you know, tornado twins kind of thing, like Nora and now Bart. That's interesting. So yeah, like that seems kind of, you know, we've done this, right?
So I'm wondering, is there a path? So we're kind of, you know, a little bit of speculation around this, right? So I'm wondering if there is a path to establishing Bart as a means to get Nora back, and perhaps Bart and Nora kind of become the twins. I don't know. Honestly, I have no earthly idea. You know, it does kind of remind me of Diggle's daughter that became a son. And then after Crisis, they had both the daughter and the son. They both existed. You know what I mean? So it's kind of I'm wondering if there will be almost like a little family crisis, if you will, when all this is said and done, so that we have both Bart and Nora. I don't know. It makes me nervous, man. It makes me nervous because on the one hand, Nora was one of my favorite characters that they introduced on this show. I really, really dug her storyline. I actually thought that she provided a lot of great growth opportunities for both Barry and Iris. And I'm excited to see, on the one hand, Bart coming in with Barry and Iris having learned from their experiences with Nora. But on the other hand, I am a little nervous that this means that Nora's not coming back at all. Like, literally, she is gone. She is erased from the timeline. And that was it. Kaput. She, you know, no more.
Yeah. I mean, well, maybe it's something like this. You know, maybe now, post-crisis and everything, there are twins, but it's Bart's the speedster and not Nora.
We'll see.
Or maybe she loses her speed, and that's why Bart comes back, is to try to help Nora regain it. I don't know. Yeah, but, I mean, she looked pretty clearly erased from the timeline last time we saw her.
I think you're right. I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening. But, yeah, so that casting announcement is there. Yeah, I'm excited to see where they take the storyline. Tentatively, a little nervous, but at the same time, hopeful, and I think there might actually be a lot of fun. So, all right, there you go. That's your news flash. Let's jump into it. You ready, Belle?
Let's do it.
All right, man. Let's jump into the rundown. Episodes 4 and 5 for season 7, Central City Strong and Fear Me. Belle, what happened this episode? Or, well, these episodes.
Well, 1 week after Ava's attack, Central City begins to rebuild, and Iris and Allegra work to cover the Mirrorverse incident. The former struggles to face the trauma from her ordeal in the Mirrorverse, while Barry grapples with his guilt over not deducing Mirror Iris was an imposter. Meanwhile, Abracadabra returns and lets himself be arrested by Argus so he can complete an anti-matter bomb that he intends to use on Central City in retaliation for his family being erased from existence following the crisis, and to make Barry suffer. Barry successfully talks Kadabra into disabling the bomb, but they are suddenly attacked by a monster which absorbs the bomb. Kadabra attempts to save Barry, but is killed by the monster. It also nearly kills Barry, but it winces in pain and runs off. Allegra is promoted to staff writer, and Iris joins a Mirrorverse support group. Elsewhere, after both suffering from headaches, Frost and Caitlin Snow have separated from one another.
Dun, dun, dun.
But then, the team deduces that when Mirror Monarch used her mirror gun on Caitlin, Frost's metahuman DNA needed to create a new body, causing their headaches. While Caitlin wants them to remerge, Frost wants to live her own life. At Star Labs, the Speed Force, as Barry's mother Nora, appears badly hurt, carrying the same energy signature from the being, now named Fuerza, that attacked Barry and Kadabra. Barry places his Speed Force gauge on Nora's wrist so they can monitor her health. The Flash encounters an enemy nicknamed Psyche, who uses his powers to force people to see their worst fears, forcing Barry into a hallucination with Eobard Thawne and Savitar, leaving him injured. Psyche sends out fear waves, trapping people in perpetual nightmares. The team uses Cecile's abilities and DeVoe's chair, along with Barry's speed, to send a wave of courage to counteract Psyche's wave of fear, defeating Psyche. However, Barry is still suffering from the attacks and needs to put himself in the cryogenic chamber to heal himself. The liaison from the government's Municipal Logistics Commission, Kristen Kramer, arrives at the CCPD. Iris doesn't trust her and does a full background check on her. And then later, Kristen admits to Joe that she's really there to apprehend the fugitive killer Frost. Later, Speed Force Nora wakes up and tells the team that Psyche also attacked her. She also believes that Fuerza and Psyche are like her.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. All right. So a lot, man. This is officially, we are in the new content, right? We are officially, you know, in season 7. We've got new episodes, and nothing says that more than that episode 4, man, in Central City Strong, where literally everybody is social distance from one another.
I'm shocked they weren't wearing masks with the excuse of, oh, there's so much dust in the air after Avis attack.
I thought the exact same thing. I was like, y'all could have actually justified those masks if you wanted to, but everybody's outside, everybody's social distance, even in the support group, everybody's sitting like seats away from each other. When Allegra goes into Iris's office, she's like, oh, cool t-shirt. Can I have one? She's like, sure. And she like tosses it across the room.
And like, you know, after the support group, nobody's like hugging each other.
Yeah, except with heart hugs, like love hugs across the way. For example, and we'll get into it, but Barry defeats the bad guy, not with punches, but with the power of love. Some people were complaining, saying that happens too often. I'm pointing out that Barry's just trying to social distance defeat the bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, like Barry's not about killing bad guys, and so how bad would Barry feel if he might be an asymptomatic carrier, mm-hmm. and like he could give Abracadabra COVID, yeah, and it'd be super speed COVID, it'd like kill him instantly.
Plus, it'd be super speed COVID. He would have sent to the future because of it's a future villain. So yeah, it all kinds of problems. That's exactly what it was. Like the bat, you know, Abracadabra fights me, Flash, and Flash is like, nah, man, 6 feet away. Okay, let's talk this out. Yeah. Okay, tell me what's really going on.
Yeah, he didn't want to send it to the future, then they'll be like, you know, we haven't seen this disease in centuries. What's going on?
You know, I was wondering if there is any kind of benefit. Like, would there have been a benefit to actually writing a pandemic into the show? That way, couldn't that help the situation to some extent? I don't know.
I don't know. Like, my wife watches Grey's Anatomy, and like, it makes sense for Grey's Anatomy because they're a hospital, right? Like, I understand that, but like, I don't know. You know, so, a lot of people watch shows to kind of escape the grim reality, yeah. And so shoving it in the face on the things that they're trying to watch to like not have to have it shoved in their face. I don't know. You know, maybe if they had like a meta villain who's like, you know, spreading a disease, I could see it something like that might work. But then again, how insensitive is that to like the people who are actually suffering because of this? Yeah. So, you know, I think in the Flash's case, it's best not to do it, not to touch on it. And for shows that deal with medical stuff like Grey's Anatomy and you know, I think Chicago Fire, since they're kind of linked, they also kind of, you know, and they're based in the real world, so they kind of like, it makes more sense there, and they treat it more respectfully and things like that. And so, yeah, it doesn't feel as awkward or as insensitive and whatnot. But, I don't think it would work on The Flash. I think you need to keep it separate and obviously keep the actors separate because that's what they did in this entire episode. there was not a scene with two people that were within 6 feet of one another. It was hilarious. And I love the camera angles that they're doing to try to make it look like they were closer together than they were. It was
mildly distracting, but not too much. I mean, like we all know what's going on, so you know we're gonna give them a thing. It's perfectly fine. Okay, man, so much to dive into as we kind of get started here. First of all, let me ask you this: what was up with Agent Drax from Argus? Who like everything single thing that Cisco said, he was taking like extremely literal.
He was a hologram, clearly. Was he?
I mean, are we to assume,
or a life model decoy? Yeah. That escaped the Marvel Universe.
Like a lot escapes the Marvel Universe onto this TV show. But yeah, no, I think you might be right. I think that we might see that Argus is actually automated or something of that nature, right?
Or perhaps certain elements of it are. Because like none of the agents, they all had like face masks and stuff on too. Mm. Maybe they're all like robots or something.
That could be. You know, I'm wondering, was this supposed to be a joke or like a bit? Or was this actually supposed to set up the idea that maybe something at Argus is... to be dug into a little bit more?
I mean, I think it works as both. I mean, the bit worked for the episode, but you know, we're sitting here speculating about it, aren't we? So
yeah, and given what we know, and I mean, all right, let me just go ahead and say this: we're going to be talking about both episodes essentially simultaneously. It's impossible not to mention future knowledge when doing two episodes at once, especially how they play into each other. So, for example, Argus. Like, we see Killer Frost, like, you know, pieces out before Argus shows up. She doesn't want to be around him. And on top of that, we see Argus might be a little bit more automated, so perhaps not with the kind of, you know, yay, good guys at the moment. What if we're actually seeing the setup of something has control of Argus that is going after Killer Frost right now?
But I mean, why?
Well, it could be some sort of AI. We do know that Abracadabra, whenever he shows up, he loves to, you know, drop hints for what's to come down the line. He, of course, mentions the Kronark. This could be some kind of like AI type of system, you know, right? So maybe Kronark are the origins of, you know, Skynet. I mean, Kronark are kind of, you know, in the works over at Argus, you know? I don't know. Maybe.
It leaves enough there for speculation and whatnot. But it also, you know, like I said, it works as a bit. There could be some interesting things coming out of Argus. I feel like, where's Argus going to fit into this? Like, we already have these other fundamental forces that were created when the Speed Force was restarted. Right. So where does Argus fit into that? Like, where are we going to have, unless are we splitting up the season? Are we doing multiple story arcs?
I think that's it. I think what we're doing is we're laying down like groundwork for, you know, whatever might be going on with Argus as kind of the latter half of the season. I mean, this is probably diving way too deep into what may have just been like a, you know, throwaway bit of somebody's like, hey, let's put Drax on the Flash. But no, I think you're right. I think that's the situation. I mean, with the forces, and we'll go ahead and talk about this. So, you know, last episode was not my favorite episode, and I made no qualms about that. And the way in which it ended with the multiple lightnings, I was a little bit, is bitter the right word? not impressed. I think it's safe to say I was not impressed with that as a cliffhanger for a season.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, look, a lot of people saw that and they saw the various lightnings and the speculation was very much tied to this concept of the various forces. Now, for listeners who are not familiar, in very recent times, there has been an expanding on the Flash lore so that there's not just the Speed Force, but there are, in fact, other forces. There's the Strength Force, the Sage Force, the Oregano Force, the Paprika Force. No, wait, hang on. The Speed Force, the Strength Force, the Still Force, or like the Slow Force, the Sage Force, the Oregano Force, the Paprika Force. Sage Force. I think is ridiculous.
Is this like punches from the punch dimension?
Yeah, something like that.
Have you heard that?
No, but that sounds great.
It's a thing they talk about for like Cyclops. So there's punches from the punch dimension and meat from the meat dimension. It's like where like Cyclops' I-beams they're not energy blast, right? They're kinetic energy. And so where does all that kinetic energy come from? Well, his eyes open a portal to the punch dimension. And so they're all just like, you know, punches coming out of his just, you know, physical force, right?
There you go.
And then you have like, where does Wolverine, when he gets an entire arm, like, you know, ripped down to the bone, where does that extra mass come from? You don't see him eating, you know, 15 pounds of meat to get it back. Right. So it's meat from the meat dimension. Same thing with the Hulk. The Hulk goes from like a 90 pound banner to like an 800 pound Hulk. Where's the meat come from? Well, it's from the meat dimension. Yeah. So maybe that's a similar thing here. I don't know.
So I got to ask you about, what is your opinion? I mean, like, should I take this this light ribbing as a means of interpreting your feelings towards the various forces?
I'm not too familiar with the modern day interpretations of those forces you just described, especially the Oregano Force. That one sounds really mysterious to me.
You know what? If you sprinkle it in most things, it makes it taste better.
But now is this the fresh Oregano Force or the dried Oregano Force? Because there is a strong difference. Different applications.
Very different applications. I think if you're cooking like a stew or something, well, you know, I guess it really depends. Like, you know what? No, hey, let's get back on track, man. No, we need to talk about this. I'm curious because this is a new invention. This is kind of a newer concept that we've seen in recent years. And we've also seen the Flash television series leaning more towards pulling off of modern day stories than they have in kind of longer, you know, or at least more classic stories, and which, you know, sometimes that has worked well, sometimes maybe not as much. But I am curious, Bell, what are your thoughts on even just that concept, the idea of a strength force, a sage force, which is more like a mental force, and then also the still force. What is your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, you know, like again, I'm not too familiar with the introduction of these new forces in the comics, so I don't really have any background as far as that's concerned, and so I don't really have a stake in it. But I liked the idea of like You have the Flash has the Speed Force, which gives him his power. You have Superman, his Kryptonian DNA, in the gravity well of a yellow star. The interaction there is what gives him his power. Mm. Different thing, like metahumans. It's their genes that are doing it. Whereas like Barry was not a metahuman. He got, you know, struck by this lightning, this force that gave him that power. And for the longest time, that's really all the only example that we had of it. But I guess now they're putting in this new stuff. And I mean, it just, you know, we saw the lightning go out. So I'm assuming those struck people. I mean, right now, my question is, it's like, okay, so why is the Speed Force good and the other force is bad?
Well,
because it seems like the Strong Force turned Fuerza into some She-Hulk kind of thing, as Cisco mentioned in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, she kind of reminded me a little bit of like Blockbuster. But, you know, I'm curious. You're right. You're right. It'll be interesting to see where they take this. It's almost like there's a pantheon, if you will, of forces, like with these kind of these embodied forces kind of taking on these deity type of roles. You know, Cisco makes the comparison to like Zeus taking mortal form. So thus the Speed Force is doing the same. We know that it's not like the Speed Force is solely embodied in this kind of Nora form, because Barry is obviously still connected to the Speed Force. He's still able to tap into it. And so it's not like, you know, it's missing from that standpoint.
Well, yeah, it's just a portion of it, I would assume.
Well, I mean, or it could just be just a physical, like a literal physical representation, you know, like an avatar, if you will.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We'll see what goes on there. The forces, I am not a huge fan of.
Yeah.
I'm willing.
I mean, that's...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying that's kind of where I'm getting at, right? It's like, I like the idea of the Speed Force. I like the idea of the other origin stories that we had there, but like these other forces coming in, does it feel like a ripoff to me? I don't know.
Well, all right. So you remember Blackest Night?
Yeah.
So for those that are unfamiliar, Green Lantern back in the day, really from Rebirth to Sinestro Corps War to Blackest Night, there was this arc of graphic novels, this kind of magnum opus type of Green Lantern story. That was fantastic, and it expanded the lore of the Green Lanterns exponentially. And the concept was that you had this, you know, emotional spectrum. So whereas the Green Lanterns, you know, their rings are powered by their willpower, you had other rings of other colors that were connected with other emotions. And it was awesome because it created all of this like beautiful spectrum of colors to paint in for all of the various artists out there. It provided a lot of different kind of story concepts. Each individual faction within the various Lantern Corps also had kind of these deity type of creatures, if you will, that were associated with them. And it was just this amazing cosmic story that got everybody excited. And merchandise. There was tons and tons of merchandise, Bell. Like, you could get all these different rings and all of these different variants of all these different characters, and then they could become different colors. And so it was like, you know, this major, massive marketing success. And ever since then, I feel like DC has tried to recapture that time and time and time and time again. When they first introduced this concept of the various forces, like the smell of a attempt at trying to do another Blackest Night, I started to take some whiffs, man. Started to get some whiffs of that that type of thing going on here, where it's like, ooh, this worked really well for Green Lantern, but when we try to like exponentially like expand kind of some of this cosmic stuff and like, oh no, but now there's other these different factions and they have these different color schemes and all these different things, it's like, I feel like you're trying to force that same kind of like this marketing perfect moment, this kind of almost zen moment in storytelling and marketing that you had with Blackest Night. I feel like you're trying to force that, and it doesn't typically yield the best stories. And so, yeah, like, why Sage, Strength, Speed, and Still? Like, why are these the four? And are there more? And why would there be specifically more? I don't know. There's just a lot of, like, questions that I have that I don't think there will ever be answers associated with them, because I don't find them to be all that particularly interesting. Now, the great thing about the television show is that it takes from the comics and makes it its own. And so I think that there's a lot of potential for the television show to get me interested in a new way. Admittedly, when they made the comparison to kind of like, you know, these kind of godlike beings that are being created from them, there was kind of this idea of like, okay, so maybe there's like a force pantheon. Like, okay, get me excited about that, Cisco. Get me hype. I know you can.
I don't know. It still begs the question to me is like, what makes the Speed Force good? Or is it just because Barry's good? Did these other forces strike lightning into other people? Like, why was Psyche And what is, like, I'm sure they'll probably reveal this at some point, but, like, you know, Psych, what was he, the Fear Force?
Well, so that's what I was trying to figure that out, too. I've seen some people say that he's supposed to be, like, the Sage Force or something of that nature. I to me, he just seems like another villain who is tapping into some of this, like, extreme power that's available, maybe, because of these forces coming to Earth. We see, we got to talk about Cecile, man. Like, she gets in the thinker chair. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was super cool.
That was amazing. Loved the, like, the arc that her character went on. A lot of times, like, her power set almost feels a little shoehorned in from time to time. This time it was like, oh man, what a great payoff. Like, epic moment for her as she kind of combated, that and kind of applied, her powers on a massive scale. And also just great to see, by the way, the reintroduction of older technology. We continue to see this series borrow from itself time and time again. And even when, like, Barry goes to uncover the thinking chair, it's like surrounded by a whole lot of, like, memorabilia and things from the past. Like, you can really see how the Flash Museum is about to come together.
Yeah, yeah, that was exactly the same thing I was thinking. I was like, oh, so the Flash Museum's in the basement of Star Labs now, I see.
I would be shocked if we don't see the Flash Museum, like, in full, not just in the future, but, like, in the present, like, if not by the end of this season, my guess is it's happening next season.
I feel like it's going to be one of those things that's going to happen, like, at the end of the show, like, at the last season is where they're going to do that, yeah. And if that's next season, I don't know. But yeah, I feel like we're going to have a fully functioning, fully fledged Flash Museum by the series end.
Yeah. Really, really quick with Fuerza. So this is part of the reason why I'm not sure if Psych is supposed to be, like, one of the kind of the Force gods, because Fuerza looks similar to Nora, just a really, like, hulked out Nora, right? Like, well, are they all going to look like Nora?
You know, I was trying to picture who it reminded me of, and I couldn't think of anyone. Now that you say Nora, I can kind of see it.
Well, I mean, it's a monstrous thing. You know what I mean? Like, there's a, yeah, it's a monstrous version of a, you know, somebody.
Yeah, like Bruce Banner and the Hulk, you know, right. There's similarities there. You can tell there's similarities there, but yeah, they don't look the same, obviously. So yeah, and I guess that's the thing, too. It's like these don't seem like they've chosen a human host, if you will. Like, right. Barry is the human host for the Speed Force. And then we have Speed Force Nora is the physical incarnation of the Speed Force. Maybe these are the physical incarnation of those forces. They haven't chosen a champion, if you will.
That's interesting. Maybe these other forces have come to Earth for that purpose. Maybe Fuerza is looking for her Barry Allen. And maybe, you know, hey, if in fact you have, you know, Psych, if he is to be the, you know, the deity of the Sage Force, maybe what we saw with Cecile is that she will be kind of the champion of the Sage Force. I mean, we saw kind of her eyes do a funny thing, and we even saw Cisco kind of looking into her eyes, being like, you know, hey, there's something happening here. This is not, you know what I mean? Like, there was something different.
The other thing, too, is that, you know, she had that voice talking to her, telling her, you know, it's time to come home.
Well, that was her. Oh, that's a good point.
Because that wasn't her nightmare, I don't think. That was the bank robbery was going on at that point, and the security guard was having a nightmare, and she was just, like, picking up on the residual psychic energy or whatever. And So it sounds to me like that was the Sage Force or the Fear Force or the Fear Factory.
They may introduce different forces into this. We have no earthly idea where they're going to take it. I mean, the other thing, too, is since her eyes did glow green, and since she was in kind of like a bit of a meditative state, I wonder if the idea might actually be that instead of tapping into the Sage Force, maybe she was tapping into the Still Force. I don't know. Are we going to see a return of the Turtle, by the way, if we're going to have the Slow Force show up?
Yeah, that was kind of my thought. But here's the thing, though. Okay, so... where's a
Bell?
What?
She's McSnurtle.
Yes,
she's McSnurtle. That's what it is.
She is McSnurtle,
and McSnurtle is the Still Force deity.
Yes.
Ah! We found, like, McSnurtle. Yeah.
McSnurtle is the yeah, it's the Slow Force
the post entity. The post crisis McSnurtle is the Still Force deity.
So, but we saw four distinct bolts of lightning come out of there.
Yeah.
And now correct me if I'm wrong, one of them was purple, right?
No, we had blue, which I think is supposed to be sage. We had red, which I think is supposed to be strength. And we had green, which I think is supposed to be still. And then we had yellow, which of course we know is speed.
Why was I thinking one was purple?
You know,
I think what it was is that, cause I saw Fuerza and then I saw Psyche and both like, Fuerza had a purple jumpsuit on and Psyche had purple powers. So I was kind of I was expecting when these villains were to show up that their power set would be reflections of the colors of lightning that we
sure,
saw.
Sure.
And so far that hasn't been the case.
Which is confusing. We are children. Marvel taught us that one color means one thing. And so you need to show.
yeah. Like
spoon feed this to us.
I mean, for real. But like that, but you know, we've derived meaning from different you know, colors of lightning, which seem to be the real the real thing here. And I think that's you know, I think that's true here. So like that, it just begs the question to me. It's like, why aren't we seeing that with Fuerza and Psyche?
I'm not a huge fan. That's the other thing too, of these different forces being visually communicated in lightning. For that reason, I find that like a little confusing, a little frustrating. It doesn't make as much sense to me. Like, wouldn't the strength force, like, wouldn't it manifest in more of like a, I don't know, a physical kind of way? Like, wouldn't the sage force be more of like a, you know, a mental thing, or even the still force, if it's supposed to be more of like a meditative approach to stillness? I all of these, I feel like still force, that shouldn't be a lightning. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I agree completely. Yeah, like when we saw the lightning bolt go up, we should have seen Barry's lightning bolt and then three other color mists or vapors or beams or whatever, but they shouldn't have been lightning.
Yeah, that it's a little confusing. And maybe it was, and again, I'm not entirely sure they knew they wanted to go in this direction. I think they just threw a bunch of lightning colors in the sky and called it a day, but I went on that rant last week, so I'm not going to do that again. hey, let's talk about Frost and Caitlin. They have done the whatever the reverse of that Kamitaya thing.
The fusion dance.
Fusion dance. They did the unfusion dance.
Yeah, well, they took off their one of the earrings. There's also a pair of earrings you can put on. One person puts on one, the other puts on the other, and they fuse.
There you go. They did the exact opposite of that. And so we got Caitlin and Frost. Now this is exciting for me. I don't know that I've said specifically I wanted this, but I have specifically wanted this for quite some time.
What? For them to be split?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Like, this is the best of both worlds. Quite literally, we get to keep Caitlin. We get to keep Frost. We now have a Frost that can become a villain. We now have a Caitlin that can stay a hero. Or twist: what if Frost stays the hero and Caitlin becomes like a mad scientist villain?
I don't see that happening.
I'm just saying it could, though.
Yeah, I feel like a Frost villainous turn is going to be like an accidental one. Like, she's going to be, because like, she's clearly reformed, right? Mm. But I feel like pushed into or put into a corner or a situation where she has to like defend herself or whatnot, she's going to be like one of those good guys on the run kind of thing. Like, she's going to be chased by Tommy Lee Jones and she's going to be like, it was the one armed man. And he's like, I don't care. And she's like, I didn't kill my wife, and then she jumps off a dam
and then freezes it.
Yeah. She slides down the dam.
There you go. Yeah. No, I think you're right in spirit, if not in execution.
Well, you don't think Tommy Lee Jones is going to come hunt Killer Frost for killing her husband and then blaming it on a one-armed man and then.
I don't think that's going to happen in the slightest. I think it'd be amazing if they get Tommy Lee Jones for this, but no, I don't think that's going to happen at all. No, but I do think that you're right on. I think that we are going to see the beginnings of Killer Frost going full evil. I like that it's not, you know, that we are going to kind of take a little bit of a slow burn, a freezer burn, if you will. So I'm all for it. And, you know, I like the idea that this, you know, could potentially pit Caitlin against Frost. Up front, we see that Frost does want to be separate. She is kind of benefiting from having the ability to stretch out her legs. And we see that Caitlin doesn't like that. Caitlin kind of wants her back in her head. What about this? Why do you think Caitlin was so eager to connect the two again? Is it because of like abandonment issues with her own family? Or is she concerned that Frost without Caitlin could yield to some of Frost's lesser, you know, qualities, more evil tendencies, if you will?
Well, Frost kind of said, or like Caitlin said in the episode, that, you know, she missed her and she wanted her back because, you know, she just missed that presence of her. And I feel like it was more along those lines than Caitlin being worried about Frost. I don't think Caitlin worries about Frost anymore.
So here's the thing. I was surprised that Sisko was actually as like, you know, oh, well, got to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. Like, he was very quick to like be like, all right, let me just go ahead and figure out a whole fusion dance thing for you guys. You'd think he'd be more excited. I mean, he was excited. He had that, you know, dumb, goofy smile on his face. Earlier, I was like, hey, check it out. Two Caitlins at the same time. Like, he was just like big wide-eyed.
Well, I kind of get the feeling, though, that we might get a fusion dance between them to save Frost from, like, you know, the government and whatnot.
Interesting.
And so it might be a kind of thing where, like, they fix the Firestorm Matrix and they call it the Froststorm Matrix, and they can split and join up at will in order to kind of like hide her or whatever. But who knows? Will they at that point then just take Caitlin?
Could be that Frost goes on to be, you know, the champion of the Frost Force.
Ooh, no, I got it. The Frost Force. I feel like this is what's going to happen. Maybe they will stay apart and they're going after Caitlin because they know that Caitlin is Killer Frost. And then Killer Frost is like, no. We have to split. Or if they do get joined together, they'll be like, we have to split. I'll take the fall, whatever. And because that was her biggest fear, right? Is that Caitlin turned her in? And she's going to refuse, and Caitlin's going to refuse to. And then so that's going to result in them saying, okay, well, we're taking you, Caitlin, because you have Killer Frost in you. And then she's going to be like, no, and they're going to split. If they are together, which they might not be, or she's just going to go turn herself in so that Caitlin doesn't get in trouble for harboring a fugitive.
I would love to see, you know, we've gotten like, you know, rogues team ups throughout the series, but we've never really gotten like the rogues as a season long force to be reckoned with. With Frost switching sides, if she was to switch sides, like let's say she goes off to Argus and she makes some friends in prison. It'd be nice to see. Well, not nice, but I mean, it would be interesting to see a storyline where, like, she was either a top tier, if not the leader of the rogues, fighting Team Flash, because she now this is actually one of our own. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to introduce a new character with some sort of backstory shoehorned in of like, I got a daughter and she's really sick and that's why it's okay for me to break the law. Like, we actually know who this person is. And we've been with her. And we know, and like, you know, we're invested in her journey so that if Barry and Iris need to hold hands in front of her and tell her that the world is going to be fine and you know, she's through the power of love, their Care Bear stare is going to save the day, then we'd be more attuned to it because it's Frost. And it's like, well, yeah, of course we're going to try to like Care Bear stare her.
Yeah.
You know, and not just for social distancing, like, because we want her to be back.
Well, and also, yeah, like it would kind of make sense, right? Like, let's say the circumstances of her arrest, like she was doing well, and like she wasn't pardoned for the things that she did, but perhaps like she feels like the system's betrayed her, and maybe Barry and Caitlin and the team try and absolve her and it doesn't work, and so she becomes jaded to that, and so, you know, she doesn't want to lash out at Barry because she doesn't have any hard feelings against Barry, but she's like, this system's got to stop. It's corrupt and it's bad. And it's putting good people behind bars. And so I'm fighting against the system by doing these things. And Flash, of course, is going to be like, well, I got to stop you because what you're doing is illegal and it's wrong in my, you know, Flash eyes. And so they have a difference of opinion there that she gathered because of her treatment at Argus or the circumstances of her arrest. And so, therefore, you have Frost, who would be a rogue who doesn't necessarily want to hurt Barry, but doesn't want Barry getting in her way. Hmm. And so we could have a situation where, you know, Frost feels this need and this desire to lash out against the system that betrayed her. And Flash has a need and a desire to prevent her from doing things that might harm others. And maybe Caitlin doesn't want to harm others, but like there could be, you know, collateral damage and things like that with the stuff that she and the rogues do. So I could see that arc for Frost.
Yeah.
The thing that I don't want to happen though is it's kind of funny I'm saying this because I know we said we don't like things to just drag out. It's like, oh, how many episodes is this going to go on before it finally ends? Because we had a lot of episodes building up Frost. And so I think it would be this needs to be something, if they're going to do something like that, it needs to happen over the course of several episodes so we can kind of see her slowly build up into that Killer Frost persona again, because you don't want all the work that was put in to her character in all those other episodes just to be thrown out the window in one fell swoop. You know, that it just it,
I don't know that it's going to take that many episodes for me. I think I'm ready.
I don't know. I feel like it just betrays all the character building they did before.
Yeah,
you know, it's like why spend all these episodes building her up to be this person, and then all of a sudden, like one episode when she meets one bad guy, and the one bad guy's like, you know what, you should just do some crime, yeah, and all of a sudden she's like, you know what, I will do crime, and like it betrays her character because her character has had a lot of growth, and so for her to reverse that growth, there needs to be a lot of good story there to make it make sense.
No, I hear that. I mean, like, you know, one thing that would be kind of interesting is as we see her in the field, kind of establishing her power. If there was some reason that kind of pushed her to kill someone, because again, hadn't actually killed anybody, and then maybe we see kind of this difference of opinion, kind of almost like in a Barry Oliver type of split, where Killer Frost is like, Barry, we gotta ice, you know, no pun intended, we gotta ice some of these people, like you know, there's some people you can't care bear stare down, you gotta actually put them, you know, 10 feet under, and you know. And so maybe we see her become something of an anti-hero, but maybe that pushes her a little bit deeper into, you know, well, if you can't beat him, join. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, she becomes an anti-hero and she doesn't have the support that she needs, so she has to do other things to get the, you know, money or whatever that she needs to continue fighting crime in her way.
Yeah. No, it'd be interesting to see. But I think this provides a lot of exciting storytelling opportunities, so I'm really, really looking forward to seeing where these characters go, because both Caitlin and Frost, I think, are far better separate than they were stuck together. And I think we as an audience are better for it as well. Man, Allegra gets a promotion. She's going to be a staff writer for Central City, the Central City Citizen. We also see that even though she is right across the room from Iris, she's got quite the overarm to be able to toss that t-shirt all the way across. Iris, man, loved Iris's story arc, especially in the first episode where she was kind of dealing with what came before and kind of the trauma from the Mirrorverse. I found the scene where she went to the rehab, or not rehab, but the kind of the anonymous type of group, the support group for folks who went through that experience, reminded me a ton of Jessica Jones in season one with the Purple Man.
Yeah. I see what you're saying with that. Like, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
It's very similar in that, you know, you were literally watching your life, like you had no control over what was going on. I mean, you know, obviously very, very different. But that loss of control, that complete kind of abuse, and not just being pulled apart, but also having to watch someone else live your life. I thought that the way they handled that, where it wasn't just like, oh, well, you know, dust hands off, that, you know, that was last season. It's kind of nice that we've actually seen some bleed over, and how much of that is because the end of last season is technically the beginning of this season, or rather how much of that was planned, who knows? But I think we're better off for it, because that was such a defining moment, especially in Iris's life, to have to go through that traumatic experience for, you know, half a season, essentially, or at least a quarter of a season.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's always nice to see stuff have consequences, right?
Yeah. Although people are still kind of like questioning her motives. So like when she's visiting her dad and the, you know, the agent is there, lady who's looking for Killer Frost is there. She's very paranoid, or she comes across as very paranoid. So Joe's thinking that maybe this is still tied to the Mirrorverse, but I don't know. He might actually be right. Like, it might be two things. She might have had a hunch, which she did, and it was right, to be fair, but it also could be a little, you know, PTSD. I don't know that, like, a good pep talk and, you know, and going before the Mirrorverse Anonymous group just absolutely, like, cures, you know, cures such a traumatic experience.
Yeah.
Oh, Mecha Vibe. Man, we got to talk about Mecha Vibe real quick. What do you think about Mecha Vibe?
You know, I think it's cool. It sort of makes his decision to not be a meta anymore seem pretty stupid.
Nah. I mean, yeah. Listen. I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to complain about that anymore. I just love that he's getting back in the field. And, you know, if he's like, hey, I don't want the shortcut of being a meta human. I want to, you know, be... use my science, you know, and I'm going to science my way into the field. I'm going to science my way in the back of the field. I'm going to science here, I'm going to science there, I'm going to science all over the place. Mecha Vibe.
You know, honestly, I wouldn't have really cared if he'd just been like, yeah, I made a cure for the cure. And then I just never talked about it ever again.
You know what? I disagree. I like Mecha Vibe. I like this approach, and I'm not going to complain about it. Although, it's possible that perhaps there is more going on with Cisco. And that's going to lead us to this week's
Speedster Speculation.
Belle, we saw Psyche give everybody visions of things that they fear. We actually went into their visions of things that they fear, except for one person. We never actually got a chance to see what Vibe saw. And, you know, when asked about it, he's like, it's just Camilla, something bad happened to Camilla. What did you guys see? Like, he is not ready to talk about what's going on. And if you remember, while he was stumbling around, he said, this can't be how it all ends. Belle, what if Psyche was tapping into Vibe's, you know, latent powers and giving Vibe not just a vision or a nightmare of what he fears, but a vibe of a potential future that he fears?
No, you can't say that Vibe's having vibes and not say and not agree with me about the whole, like, he just reversed the cure.
No,
he doesn't have any more future powers. He only has vibrational blasts. That's all he's got.
I'm saying that Psyche did this. Psyche tapped into latent meta abilities.
He doesn't have any latent meta abilities. They're all gone. He cured them.
Well, okay, fine.
That's why I'm adamant that he should have just been like, "Yep, I cured the cure," and then just didn't and then just done it. Oh, he's meta human again. Bang.
All right, fine. All right, so what do you think that Vibe saw?
I think he saw Camilla breaking up with him.
Seriously, that was it? That would be so lame. Can't be true.
Well, why not show us anything?
Because that's my point.
Everyone else is. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't buy it. Like, there are WandaVision.
He saw Mephisto.
I will no longer speculate at completely insane stuff. And right. To me, that's kind of completely. I think it's all what we're just seeing.
You're just taking it on face value, 100%.
Yeah, I think it's. I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
WandaVision broke you. But WandaVision broke everyone. That's fine. That's, you know what? Yeah. Maybe we shouldn't even have speedster speculation. We should have WandaVision anonymous
to speculate about. Yeah. Power. But I don't know. Like, yeah, he was quick to say, what did y'all think of Shore? And when they didn't show us what he was thinking of, but no, it can't end this way. Like, okay, what could be coming to the end? His relationship? Yeah, that's what they're wanting us to think of.
I think that whatever is going on with him, whatever he saw is related to what's going on. All right, this is my WandaVision-esque, you know, swing for the fences type of speculation here. I think that what Vibe saw is some kind of, like, nightmare future scenario that he's able to see because of latent powers. All right, I hear it as I'm saying it, but just let me get it out.
Yeah, right now in my head, right now, I just see you as Charlie Day, like, in front of the whiteboard with the red string all over it, just like, you know, with a dirty shirt on, like, waving your arms around.
Right, right. Listen, he's got the latent abilities. Psyche was able to tap into him because Psyche's connected to the Sage Force, and that's some sort of god power thing, that situation that's going on. And that gave Vibe a vibe of the future. And it's a future that's connected with whatever's going on with Argus, which is also connected to whatever is going on with the Kronark. And so basically the back half of this season is all going to be tied to whatever Vibe saw. And if I'm right, you owe me a Coke.
I'll pay you $1. So what you're saying is #, it's all connected.
Yes. Yes, that is what I'm saying. I hate you.
Right. Yeah, no.
All right, fair enough.
I mean, sure, you can think that, but I will give you $1 if that happens.
All right, I will take that dollar. I will take that dollar to the bank, sir. All right, let's so we're doing things a little bit different. We wanted to incorporate some Snyderverse talk here, or rather some Into the Snyderverse? No, some Snyder Cut. We want to talk about the Snyder Cut of Justice League that came out before we can let y'all go. And, well, you know what, because this is Flash TV talk, we're going to be we'll mention a few things, but we'll mostly talk about what happened with Barry, with the Snyderverse version of Barry Allen. And if you've not seen the Snyder Cut, if that is something that is important to you to not hear people talk about, until you get a chance to, I guess, pause life for 12 hours. why did it come out at the end of the pandemic?
I know, right?
Didn't it come out at the beginning? But anyway, so yeah, so we're about to talk about that. Full spoilers for the Snyder Cut of Justice League. If that is not your cup of tea, we'll see you next week. All right. Snyder Cut. They has been released. Release the Snyder Kraken Bell.
So I enjoyed it. It was much better than the theatrical release. The first time I watched it, what time did we start? It was over at like 2:30 in the morning, and I didn't feel that time at all. It was very, very strange. Mm. Like, I was halfway expecting for a 4-hour long movie. And granted, you know, the same thing with Endgame. It was 3 hours long, but I don't feel that time when I'm watching that movie.
Right.
And I didn't feel the time when I was watching the Snyder Cut. It was really interesting. Cause I was interested in it. Like, it was, you know, like the new scenes that we saw with the Flash and with a couple of the, like, cyborg stuff and like those different things, the way they retold the story made it a lot more interesting. Like, I'm not saying it's a perfect film and that it's like, cause I've seen people like, oh my God, this is the best film that's ever been made. There's no point in watching any other movie or making any other movie ever again because it's Snyder. And I'm like, no, that's not true at all. There are still problems with it. There's no perfect movie, but like, it's way better than Joss Whedon's cut. And again, that's not saying a lot.
Well, okay. it's a low bar. It's a low bar.
It's a very, very low bar. But it jumps over that bar pretty well. It was fun. It was entertaining. The second time I watched it, I did fall asleep. So yeah. I will say that.
Well, I've only watched it the one time. All right. So first of all, yes, Eon's better than the Whedon cut. The biggest thing this movie has going for it in comparison to the Whedon cut is makes sense.
Yeah. Like, the story makes sense.
Yeah. Look, don't hire this. I think there's a lesson here. There's a couple of lessons here.
Which WB will not learn, unfortunately.
Well, so first of all, Zach, let me just say this. Zack Snyder, by all appearances and stories, seems to be an amazing human being, a nice person, a good, you know, obviously someone who's been through a lot of tragedy, but also, you know, just, you know, well beloved by a lot of people who have worked with him and are close to him. And so this is no slight to Zack Snyder. Here's my thing. Don't hire Zack Snyder unless you want Zack Snyder to do what Zack Snyder does. Don't put Zack Snyder in a corner. That being said, for like launching a Justice League or a DC film franchise, you never should have hired Zack Snyder in the first place. This man like isn't going to like make you like, you know, your traditional blockbuster-esque movie.
Unless.
What?
Unless.
What? What do you mean unless? No.
If you want to tell an Elseworlds tale,
right? But like no,
the Injustice storyline, which is what he was doing, then sure.
But that's my point.
Get Zack Snyder.
That's
to do
my
it.
Point. You don't hire him like so. That's exactly my point. So you do not bring Zack Snyder in to launch a Marvel competitor. Like, you bring Zack Snyder in once you get to your quote unquote phase four of your Marvel competitor, right? Like when we can get silly and crazy and do some things. This is a movie. I think this is actually a fantastic film. I think it is absolutely incredibly audacious. I think that it is a movie that is made for a very specific audience that is not universal, that is not going to be kind of a big crowd pleaser, that is not going to be a huge moneymaker. It is going to cost you an arm and a leg, and it is going to appeal to a very select group of fans that are not going to have the kind of money that's going to, you're going to see a return on it. I think it's a terrible business venture for this movie to have ever been made, but I do think it is a fantastic movie and it is for a target audience. And Bell, my friend, we are that target audience. So I think that there is something to be said for, you know, the audacity of Zack Snyder to make this movie. But I think that it's just this beautiful mess that, The winners out of all of this is us, is the fans, the people that actually like, you know, exploring kind of an Elseworlds, as you say, Injustice version of the DC universe, the Snyderverse, if you will. I thought it was great. I loved seeing the actual story for Cyborg, which we never actually got a chance to see in the original. I love how they set up the Speed Force with Barry. I loved how he played directly into the defeat at the end. I love that we got a chance to see him reverse time. Man, there were so many great moments. I actually stood up, man. I stood up in my chair and started yelling, "Run, Barry, run!" at the at the very tail end when he was going back and reversing time. That was amazing and visually stunning. It was incredible.
Yeah, like all the Flash stuff, I really enjoyed. So the first Flash scene was cool, but it's kind of creepy, and we'll talk about that in the
Let's save that one for when we actually go.
Yeah,
because I've got thoughts on that too.
Yeah. But overall, the story was good. It didn't need to be 4 hours. It did not need to be 4 hours. It's ridiculous.
It needed to be 12 hours, Bell. 12 hours.
It needs to be the rest of time.
Release the Snyderverse.
There is only the Snyder cut.
Release the Snyder timeline.
Overall enjoyed it. I didn't think I had zero expectations going into this, and it exceeded my expectations.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
but I really I wouldn't like I actually you
to
know,
be
I
fair
actually
I think
wanted...
the original one I would end with that with zero expectations, and it definitely went below my expectations. So no, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair commentary.
Yeah. And I actually wanted to watch it again. Even though it's 4 hours long, I wanted to watch it again. And definitely did not happen with Justice League. I was really not looking forward to watching Justice League when we did the rose colored cut. And now I want to see Zack Snyder's Justice League 2 and 3.
Yeah, I actually
never thought I would ever say that.
Yeah, I want to see a continuation of this world with the understanding of what this world is, with this world being allowed to be what it wants to be or what it is trying to be. But I think that it's, I think in order for that to happen, I think there needs to be more of an HBO series than a movie. This universe and this storyline lends itself to an HBO type of show and to be more episodic rather than to be a massive movie that's not made for everybody, and let it be that good that people are talking about it, and then let me get on board on this. Okay, Superman is evil. All right, well, let me get on board with this. HBO, I think, is actually, this is the weirdest, the bright little moments that we got here in the darkest timeline that we live in is the fact that we got a chance to see this movie in its completion. And I will say this, my hat's off, because I'm pretty sure I'm on record several times saying there is no Snyder cut, or the Snyder cut would not save this, and it would just be as terrible. I was wrong. I was very wrong. This is a unique movie. It is a unique movie that is made for a certain group of people. It should have never been made, but it's here now. And we have to live with that. And now, living in the world in which this exists, I have to say, I was wrong. I enjoyed this, and I want more of it.
Yeah, and I have to say that I was wrong, and that there was a lot more principal photography that Zack Snyder finished.
Yeah.
Apparently, most of the stuff that he filmed was the nightmare scene at the end. This is the $70 million reshoots that I'm talking about here.
Sure.
It was the nightmare scene at the end, and I think a couple other things. But most all of that was shot, which I was surprised by. I didn't realize that there was that much that he did. And it makes me even more surprised that the studio just destroyed what he did have, and let Whedon mess it up really bad.
See, that's the thing. And this was an unfixable movie from that standpoint.
It was. You couldn't take what Zack Snyder was doing with setting up this Injustice kind of timeline and make it into a regular superhero film.
Exactly.
Because that gives you Justice League or Joss Whedon's Justice League or Justice League, as I've seen it referred to. And it's just bad. It's bad. It's kind of like with Suicide Squad, where they had David Ayer create this movie. And then they had the trailer company make a trailer. People were like, "Oh, that trailer looks cool." And then the test audiences were like, "I don't like David Ayer's version." And then so they got the trailer company to cut David Ayer's movie.
Right. Listen, this is really what it kind of comes down to. The time to get Snyder off of this movie was way back in Man of Steel. I feel like there was a lot of people that kind of communicated this tone was not a direction they wanted to see DC go in.
But you don't see the tonal stuff until Batman v Superman.
I disagree. I think the style, the visual artistic style, kind of what's the right word here? The melancholy nature of that movie. I think that a lot of people kind of responded okay, but could we actually get a fun connected DC universe? And so you had kind of these conflicting things of like, Snyder's like, ooh, well, I will tell you a connected universe. It's not going to be fun. It's going to be like this. And people said, okay, but that's not really what we want right now. And the studio definitely didn't want that. And yet,
The studio did.
They wanted a connected universe. And for some reason, they thought that Snyder was a good person to do that for them at this time.
They wanted a connected universe that was different from Marvel. Yeah, that's what they're like. Listen, we're different from Marvel.
No, this is what the market, like, I feel like that was a bunch of marketing trying to make up for the fact that they didn't have what they actually wanted. Like when it all comes down to it, you got on a roller coaster, you had a chance to get off the roller coaster when it was safe. But now, like, it's like Splash Mountain. Okay. Like, there's several points in Splash Mountain to get off the ride. If there's a problem, you can't get off the ride once it's going down the big mountain splash thing. You know what I mean? And I feel like that's where they were, is it's like, okay, now you finally got to the top of the mountain and it's starting to go down and you're like, oh no, this isn't what we thought that this was going to be. Quick, get off the ride. Well, if you do that, you get impaled on those little plastic, you know, briar patch things. and that's what happened. That's what the Justice League cut is. It's a movie that's impaled on the Splash Mountain plastic briar patch things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which should be a Princess and the Frog ride anyway. Anyway.
But like, I don't know. Like, I don't want to be one of those, like, you know, release the air cut people. But I am curious if David Ayer's original cut of Suicide Squad was more in line with Snyder cut.
It'd be interesting to see, but I don't think that it's necessary.
No, yeah, I agree with that. I don't think it's necessary. But, you know, it's just... you have these directors and they make movies in a specific style.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're like,
let's do the exact opposite.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. Look, one more thing about The Flash I want to mention. Love that moment when he says, you know, he was my hero. He was talking about Superman. I thought that was such a great little character moment. We didn't get much of that before. And so getting these character moments with Barry and then with Cyborg especially, like, really gave this movie a heart that it was missing the first time around. And I enjoyed it very much. I'm excited to do more of a deep dive in the future, which who knows when we'll be getting to that. But eventually we will. I think it's safe to say eventually you will have a release the rose-colored cut. Look at the Snyder version, Snyder cut of Justice League.
Yeah.
Should be great. All right, man. I think that's going to do it for us for this week. Unless you have any other thoughts before we close out.
We'll hit them in the panel screen.
Yeah, the deep dive. Absolutely. All right. Well, folks, you can follow us at Flash TV Talk. You can also follow Bell at Ring That Bell.
But if 280 characters isn't enough to express your love for our show, feel free to email us at flash@podastery.com. That's podastery.com.
If you like books and faces, we're on facebook.com/Flash TV Talk.
And as always, special thanks to Charlie Bach, who provides music for our show. You can check out the rest of his awesome stuff at soundcloud.com/CharlieBach.
You like podcasts? Of course you do. Check out tvtalk.fm for some TV talking podcasts that you might also like. tvtalk.fm. And if you enjoyed this, don't worry. We'll be back in a flash.
Jordan Fisher, also known as the Fishman in high school, he swam a 200-yard relay race in 1997 and beat the world record, but it wasn't recorded due to faulty equipment. You can find out more on thingsijustmadeup.com.
You know, I'm glad that Mr. Rogers had a TV show, because I feel like he'd be labeled as a freak otherwise, which is unfortunate. In terms of like the time and everything, I feel like that, like, you know, he's got that creep factor. You know, there's that something about him. He just had that stare.
Yeah, and like, you know, Bob Ross too. I'm surprised. Like
Bob Ross, you know, was a saint. How dare you?
No, I mean, he's a great guy, but like, you know, that's the thing.
I mean,
thing
so is Fred Rogers, had to, like, but still, yeah.
Right, yeah. People had to make up stuff about Bob Ross. Have you heard the stories about him being like a Vietnam vet that like has like 300 confirmed kills and all that kind of stuff? It's all made up.
That's
it's not
true. I thought that was true.
I read that it's not true, but I'm standing by that it's not true. I both read those articles, but the one that I read saying it was not true had like backed up with actual facts. And he might have been in the military, but I don't think he wasn't like some kind of, you know, Rambo Chuck Norris, you know. I see you there in those trees. I'm gonna snipe you.
You know, this like, happy little tree. This happy little tree. That's gonna be our secret, because I'm up in that tree and I'm gonna snipe you.
I'm just gonna take my happy little knife here and just carve a happy little tree into your forehead.
How dare you? All right. We got to get back on track. Let's
use some titanium white with some blood red.
little cadmium yellow. Paint my face with your blood.
And scene.